This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Side Hustle. Today we have a special guest, Carly Hughes. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys going?
Good. Thank you. Luke, how are you going?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm glad it's Friday. It's been a really long week.
Yeah.
We had a resignation at work this week, actually. So it's been a crazy week, but glad to be doing this instead.
Yeah, I've definitely had a few as well. And this week has been hectic. So I'm really glad to be behind the mic.
And having a drink
as well. Carly, so thank you so much for obviously joining us on a Friday evening. This is probably the last thing you want to do. But
I love talking about myself, so that's fine.
Oh, great.
Perfect.
That's awesome. If you can just give us a brief intro about yourself and background and where are you now in your career?
Yeah, so I'm a Melbourne-based dietitian and I've got a small business with a few dietitians working alongside me. We're in clinics and we're also doing home visits to NDIS participants.
Okay. Yeah. NDIS is?
Oh, National Disability Insurance Scheme.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you work alongside GPs and... Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So most of our referrals come from GPs in the clinics, but we also get people inquiring like just through Google searches, but mostly it will be chronic diseases, so diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And how long have you been doing your own thing?
It's been 5 years now.
Okay.
Actually, no, I lied. Three years.
3 years. Yeah. Okay. So about what, 2017, you broke out and started doing your own thing?
Yeah, all by myself then. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, awesome. So this is like, a bit of a special case because you're kind of doing your side hustle now as a hustle.
Yes.
So before, back into that 3 year mark, what were you doing at that time?
So I had trouble telling if it was 5 or 3 years because I have been working as a dietitian for 5 years in a similar sort of industry, like in private practice.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until 3 years ago that I decided to start doing things myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually just started with my partner was working in a restaurant and next door was a medical center. And I just thought, I'm going to go in and see if they have a dietitian and if they want one. So and this was the beginning of it all. So I just walked in. I had no idea where it was going to go. And if they said, yes, we want one, I had no idea what would happen next.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we'd love a dietitian. And I just went from there. And I think doing that, just like taking the plunge and jumping in, has been something that I've been doing ever since. You know, just keep the ball rolling.
So was that directly after uni, like directly after your course or?
No. So when I finished uni, I worked at Victoria University for a year teaching students.
Yeah.
And then I went on to work in a maternity leave job in private practice.
No,
sure.
That kind of helped me learn how to do things on my own because in that position I was doing all my own billing, all my own bookings, everything myself, which is hard when you're just starting out in private practice.
Yeah.
Like you're doing everything yourself. So.
Okay. So you finish your studies within, what was it, a diploma? Was it a bachelor?
No.
What sort of certificate?
Yeah.
What was the...
So to be a dietitian, you have to have at least a bachelor degree.
Okay.
Yeah. But most courses will be masters.
Sure.
To finish you as a dietitian.
Yeah.
So I did bachelor for 4 years and then masters for two.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you must be pretty passionate about people's diets and what they consume on a daily basis. What kind of led you into it? Is it more around giving people the ability and the knowledge to eat better and have a healthy lifestyle, or were you more on the medical side or prevention? Or a bit of both?
I think both. I think the healthy eating comes across as complicated,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that people just give up on learning how to eat better because they just feel like they've got to go all or nothing, you know, and they feel like they've got to diet, they've got to cut carbs out, and they've got to do all these radical things to get their health on track. And I think I want to help people do it in a more simple way.
Okay.
But I also like that there's areas of being a dietitian where you really are influencing for example, in a hospital, if you help people that have gastrointestinal conditions, the doctors are waiting for you to call the shots. You're a really key part of that team.
Absolutely.
So I think I like that responsibility. And that would motivate me. Like, it makes me feel like I'm doing, I'm really helping someone out.
Sure.
Because they really need me in this situation. Cool. Yeah.
So going back a little bit, when you decided to do the course, did you have that frame of mind back then? Or what made you, apply for dietetics and
get into it? I actually never wanted to be a dietitian. I wanted to be a chef.
Okay.
That's what I was going to do. All through high school, I loved cooking, and I told my parents, I'm going to drop out in year 10. I'm going to do a TAFE course and I'm going to be a chef. And they supported me. Whatever I wanted to do, they helped me out. But I did have a very good careers teacher in high school, and she, she made her own tofu, and I love it.
Yeah,
I eat tofu. She's a little bit of a hippie sort of teacher, but I really warmed to her. And she said that, she's like, you're really good at health and human development and you like cooking. Maybe you can kind of put these together somehow apply for some uni courses. And at the start, I didn't like that idea, but she would say to me, if you get into the course and you don't like it, that's okay. You can just drop out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all right. You don't have to do it. And I ended up listening to her, and I applied and I got in. And in my first year of uni, I hated it.
Really?
I was my first 6 months, I was like, I don't know.
Was it too medical and too scientific for your liking?
I think that it's something that no one ever said to me, but in your first year of uni, you do a lot of foundation subjects that you might not really you just got to do them.
Absolutely.
So with nutrition, you got to do a lot of chemistry, physiology, anatomy, and it's boring parts of it. You're kind of thinking, where's the nutrition here?
Where's the fun part?
Is that to weed out the people who aren't really interested, maybe?
I think so. Well, there's a lot of people drop out in those first 6 months. But I was struggling, and I think I doubt myself a lot. So I was kind of like, I'm not good enough for this. Maybe I shouldn't be doing it. Maybe I should just go back to my dream of being a chef. And probably end up smoking a deck a day and drinking a lot of alcohol and working 16-hour days or whatever it is. But I'm very happy that I didn't do that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, my question was actually fairly similar to Luke's, but I wanted to probably delve in a bit deeper, because it seems like being a dietitian, yes, food is a very important part of it, but also there's a big angle when it comes down to kind of empathy and caring for people.
Mm-hmm.
Was that ever a thought coming into this course to start off with at uni? Was that something that you had considered, or was it more around, the food was still kind of spearheading this journey for you?
When I was little, I wanted to be a nurse. So I think that that helping people side of me was there. But I don't think it was probably, not initially, not helping people. But then as I especially got into, when I started my master's, actually probably before then, it was something that.
It's always some subconscious has been there in the back of your head.
But at the start, it's, I wasn't sure if I applied for a food technology course as well. So food was, that's what I was interested in. I don't know, I've always been in hospitality. I know that's not really helping people, but I enjoyed serving people and giving them drinks and doing things for people. So I think there was something there, but I just never
thought
about it.
There's definitely an angle to that. Yeah, for sure.
But now there definitely is. Do you know what I mean? That's what drives me to do what I do. Helping people, really. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess thinking about the different aspects of a dietitian, when you finished uni, did you know which way you wanted to go? What are the different avenues you could take as a dietitian?
So when you're at uni, especially in your master's, they teach you to be a clinical dietitian, so to work in a hospital. Most of your placement is teaching you to leave uni and get a job in a hospital.
Okay.
It is really hard to get jobs in hospitals. It's just very competitive.
Okay.
Because in a hospital you might have 30 nurses, you might have two dietitians.
Gotcha.
Does that mean they never leave? They sort of stay?
Some will. Some will be graduate positions where you'll have a dietitian coming once a year, every year, but then once their contract's up, gone. So that's what because most of your placement, you do 12 weeks of a year mm-hmm. doing clinical placement, you're most confident doing that. So when you come out, that's what you think you should be doing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I came out and I was like, oh, I don't know. Like I was thinking, I do enjoy clinical. Like I like the hospital setting, but then you're meeting patients and they're leaving within a couple of days.
Okay.
So you don't get to know them.
Yeah.
Or
they're literally just coming in to tick boxes.
Or maybe
see
they
you
pass then... away, you know? Ooh, so like, wow. Yeah, like they might come in, you might help them when they're recovering from surgery or something. And yeah, like, yeah, so it's, wow. You don't get to know people. So it's just kind of, I feel like initially, like when you're doing placement, like, oh, this could be fun. But I think long-term, I don't think I'd like that.
Okay.
So does that mean there's kind of like short-term fixes because you're not helping their habits at all?
No. Not at all. It's just like the what's happening in the present.
Yeah.
So if they're recovering from surgery or something, it might be like focusing on protein intake, you know, like getting foods in that are going to help help them recover. Yeah.
But you're not monitoring, yeah. you're not observing.
Nah. Yeah. Okay. Then if they need a dietitian outside of the hospital, they will be linked up with a community dietitian.
Gotcha.
But that won't be you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could, so like, yeah, so clinical is where a lot of dietitians will go or they'll want to go, but you could also be in food service and that could be like working at airlines, like, okay. you know, Qantas or Ansett. Ansett, sorry, Ansett doesn't exist anymore. Qantas or Jetstar.
Yeah.
You could also be in industry nutrition, so like Heinz or Sanitarium.
Sure, but that's not very clinical or... I mean, you're not really helping patients, really.
No.
You're just kind of plugging in and making sure that certain things meet certain acceptance criteria.
Yeah, okay. yeah. Okay. And then the other area would be community.
Yeah, okay.
But we do not get taught how to work in private practice.
Mm.
So what I'm doing now, we don't...
It's unheard of.
Like, you have dietitians working in private practice,
yeah.
but everything about the business side of things, you have to work that out yourself.
Sure, sure. And that's a great segue into that because that's what I was going
to
get into.
And that's what listeners will be really interested into as well. Like, how did you manage learning that and running it and, like, how does that all click together?
Yeah, I feel like it's so hard answering that question because, I think as things would pop up, you'd just try and research it and learn a little bit more about it. But I would say other dietitians that I've worked alongside, I will take information from them. It's things that they're doing, putting into practice, I will learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when it comes to, Medicare, I will, ask them questions and try and learn things about it. But it's hard. You just got to, take time out of your workday and just try and research and find out how to do something and what other dietitians are doing. So I found a lot of... there's Facebook groups that have dietitians from all over the world and mm-hmm. there's an Australian based one, there's worldwide. So I'd get on there and I'd be like, guys, I don't know. I want to start in a new medical center. How do I do it? Mm. So I used them to.
So use the community and,
for
and,
sure.
and forums.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yep.
Okay. But there's still a certain element where, you've done your appointments. You've seen an X amount of patients come through in the day, but now you got to get into the admin side of it. And then consider the accounting side of it.
Yes.
And make sure that you're paying your taxes.
Uh-huh.
Make sure you're paying expenses.
Oh, yeah.
Salaries, wages, what have you. How did you start learning all that? Was it just kind of trial and error? Or was it, did you start with one person and then kind of, or was it, did you take some sort of a blueprint from your previous experiences and kind of apply it to your business? How did you go about that?
The accounting side, I would look, on the business gov website, but I'd write down questions and ask my accountant.
Yeah.
I still found it really hard though, because the accountants talk in their own language.
Yep.
And you've got to try and understand
it. It's extra hard for absolutely no reason.
And I think for too long I used Excel spreadsheets.
Yep. There's nothing wrong with using Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, I just feel like
probably
zero.
Google spreadsheet.
Wait. Tell us a better way.
Well, now I use Xero, which I'm finding is a lot easier.
Definitely.
Because I would just, I'd be highlighting things in an Excel spreadsheet and be like, okay, has that been paid? Going through my bank transaction and, trying to, reconcile everything. And I just find it so hard to answer. I don't even know how. I feel like it's just. My mind's just blanked it out.
Yep.
I feel like those times trying to work things out was just so challenging for me because, you don't get taught much about it.
Sure.
But the accounting side has been the hardest for me. And the tax side.
So if someone was wanting to get into the same industry and eventually run their own private practice, what would be one piece of advice that you'd give them?
Get a, like, even just a cheap accounting software to start with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's definitely the business side as opposed to the actual day-to-day running of, you know, seeing patients and what have you.
Yeah, and you can get practice management software that will link the two together.
Gotcha.
So you can do all your bookings.
They'll integrate together.
And all your invoicing is in there. But from, like, a business side of things, like, that's what I would suggest, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm hearing is there's a bit of empathy, there's a bit of food passion that's coming along, but I'm still curious as to what made you go, all right, stuff it. I'm no longer working for someone else. I want to start my own thing and really see this thing through. At which point did you kind of just go, yep, I've had enough, or now is the right time?
Yeah.
Talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah. So I guess I wanted to have my own work schedule. I hate waking up and starting at 9 a.m. I still do work at... I do 9-to-5 days, definitely, but there's a lot more flexibility in my timetable, and I love that. I love that I can decide when I want days off. I don't have to email someone and get them to schedule in days off and get it approved and whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that was, like, something that was important to me. Also, being able to do things the way that... like, be the dietitian that I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you work for another company, they might want you to weigh people, and I might not want to weigh people.
Yeah.
You know, so it was allowing me to be the dietitian I want to be. And I also thought that I'd be able to make better money as well working for myself.
Okay.
So
you saw an opportunity. It was more of an opportunity as opposed to being sick of something that was reoccurring, or I mean, it could be a combination of both.
I also got sick of, like, trying to find jobs that were full time, and, you know, I'd be having two part time jobs, and then one wasn't really, you know, it might be you're working on a percentage basis, so you might only see one client today and you're not making much. And then I thought, why am I giving this, like, employer a cut? You know?
So when you're working for someone, you only get paid on the amount of patients you see per day?
Maybe. It depends. So you could get hourly pay, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But most will be subcontractor positions.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's better for you to be your own contractor if that's what you want to do, because you'll get a larger cut.
Yeah. But at which point did you go, okay, cool, I'm ready now? Did you have enough of a network to take with you?
Yeah, so I was working in hospitality when I started working in medical centres. So I, in my case, it was don't give up your nighttime job. So during the day I would work in a medical centre, and then I'd go and work in hospitality at night to make enough cash. And I'd do that maybe like 4 nights of the week, and then one day on the weekend for, say, like 8 hours.
Wow. So in the daytime, 5 days a week, you're doing your dietitian thing.
I'm trying to fill my days.
Trying to fill your days. And then at night, from what time to what time are you doing the hospitality?
About 5 or 6 at the latest I'd start. And then I'd finish usually around 10, but it could be like 1 a.m.
You really wanted this dietitian thing to work.
Yeah, definitely.
That's amazing.
So this hospitality aspect, I guess, is fueling the side hustle, or paying for the side hustle to be able to...
Yeah,
to continue,
definitely, definitely.
So how does that? So thinking about, like, from then to now. So now is like I think we'll get into now how your day looks. But thinking back then about trying to fill your days, well, what does that look like? Like, I know that there's like the aspect of, like, talking to the doctors, the GPs, trying to get them to refer and all that sort of stuff, as well as talking to patients that may not want to talk to you.
Oh yeah,
trying to win them over. Like, how does all that come together? Because that would be a big... Like, how does your mental health handle that whole day? Like, that's a big...
It is really hard. Like, working in hospitality, it's more physically... Like, it can be a little bit mentally exhausting, but it's physically... Whereas,
what was specifically that you were doing in hospitality?
Waitress.
Okay. At a restaurant
bartender,
or bar?
At a golf club.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool.
In Altona.
Yeah.
And I was there 11 years. So that was, like, my first job. And then I left that to focus on... my dietitian.
Yeah, wow.
Work, yeah.
Wow.
But after that first medical center.
Sorry, when you were still doing the hospitality, you were still studying as well at the same time, weren't you?
Yeah. At some point, like the whole time.
There'd been overlap at some point.
Yeah, because I started when I was 15 at the golf club, and I left there when I was 25 or 26.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
But with the dietitians, like, hustle.
Yeah.
So after that first medical centre, that sort of gave me a little bit of not ammunition, but like made me, you know, I had a bit more drive to,
of course,
you know, I did that for a little while, and then I thought, okay, maybe I'll go and see if other medical centres might need a dietitian. Mm. So that's how I started to fill up my days with the clinics. And then once I was in the clinics, marketing myself was, I found, hard, and I didn't really know what to do. So the Dietitian Association does give you some kind of, you know, how to market yourself in private practice, but it's very vague, and you don't really, I think you really got to work things out yourself. But one big thing that I did was like a lot of lunches with doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So holding lunches at their medical center, bringing in like a platter of sandwiches or something, introducing them, letting them know all the different conditions they can refer for.
Okay.
It's not just diabetes, you know, like they, when they think of chronic diseases, they will go, oh, a dietitian is for weight loss and for, you know, there's things that pop into their head. But educating them on, you know, we can see people with like gout or osteoporosis or.
Okay. So you're taking kind of extraordinary initiatives to be out there, be seen, be heard.
Yeah.
People know your name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And I wanted to not just talk to the doctors like in a business sort of sense, but get to know, like, be sort of a friend. So, you know, I'd get to know, like, you know, where they grow up and, you know, just kind of.
Yeah, wow, okay.
Yeah, so then they felt like we built some rapport.
So I guess dig into that a little bit, because that would be a bit of a task. Like,
oh, yeah.
You'd have to either present to the room or work the room or both.
Yes.
Like, how does that. So how do you keep there? So you have a platter of sandwiches.
Yeah.
Doctors coming in at random times for their lunch while they're. Have patients waiting, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
How do you keep their attention, or how do, like, is it like a small pitch, or how do you, how does that sort of look?
Yeah, so as they come in like bits and pieces usually. It's like when I first did this, I thought they'd all be sitting in the room and I'd be able to go in, give them a speech and then leave. No, not at all. Ain't like, so
100 referrals.
I was like, then I'll be fine.
Yeah.
No, they'll just come, like, you know, one will come and I'd just introduce myself. And I had a flyer with all the different, you know, conditions and when to refer to a dietitian. So I used that as a, you know, a bit of a summary.
Yep.
So if I didn't get a lot of time to talk to a doctor, I would be able to give them that.
Yeah.
I'd pretty much just repeat myself to every single doctor that came into that room.
Wow.
But you...
You learn your pitch over and
over
again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
But, you know, you might have like 10 GPs working at that clinic, but only 5 come in for lunch that day.
Mm.
So it never really was that overwhelming. Mm. And that was actually frustrating because you would be prepared. You'd get food for 10 people, you know, so you'd spend...
Quite,
you know,
a bit of money
and then
everything.
And then there'd be heaps of sandwiches left and all this like and fruit platters.
Who gave you that idea? Was it something that you came up with, or did you learn it from someone else to kind of take in food and try to fish for these GPs?
I think my first boss, like when I was in private practice, she gave me ideas like that about marketing yourself.
Yeah.
Also, it is something that was talked about in uni, but I didn't know if it was something that is done now or if that's just, you know, because all the lecturers are like 60 years old. So you're like, is that an old school thing? Do people do something different now?
Yeah.
But I think doctors, I feel like, you know, even though everyone's going really digital, I think that face-to-face is always going to be really important in healthcare. Yeah.
Totally.
Not even, I mean, healthcare, obviously, but I think in almost every industry.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to look in someone's eyes. You need to gain their trust. You need to figure out exactly what you guys are engaging kind of to do together.
Yeah.
And kind of go from there. So it seems like nothing has really gotten in the way of you reaching that point.
Mm.
You're making sandwiches. You're putting together fruit platters. You're taking time out of your day to talk to these general practitioners who may care or may not even give two shits and just walk out, just grab a sandwich, be like, hey, nice to meet you, I'm out the door, whatever, you know. How did that drive, how did you maintain the drive, how did you maintain the momentum?
And it's hard,
because
like you do all that work and you send out like lots of letters and like little gifts in the mail to them. Like I might put like a little hot chocolate on a postcard, you know, things like that. And you get nothing.
What kept you going? What kept you going? Like, what was the thing that was like, nah, I'm not going to stop until I reach what I need to do, you know, what I need to reach or what I need to do?
I think you do, like, I think Luke mentioned this earlier about, like, you know, you'll get some patients that might not want to see you, and there will be, but then there's also a lot that really, like, they'll be like, thank you so much. Like, thank, you know, no one's ever explained something like that to me before. Or, you know, they'll come back in and be like, I've actually turned around my diabetes. Like, I was, you know, I was just diagnosed, but then I lost a few kilos, and now I don't need medication, and I'm just lifestyle controlled. And I think that made me feel like, oh, I am, you know, even though I doubt myself a lot and I feel like I'm not good enough for this, there's people out there that think I am.
Gotcha.
You know, and I'm helping them. Yep. And you know, there were some good clinics where I was getting a few clients and I knew that there would be others out there, you know. It was just, I just had to keep going and, you know, I knew I had the hospitality job on the side that was giving me a bit of cash. And, you know, I was there for so long, so it was just like, you know, it was so easy.
That become family.
But you do feel defeated a lot. You have days where you might have like three booked and none of them come. Or you'll have days where no one's booked and you're like, what the hell? Like, what's going on? There was many times where I was kind of like, maybe I should just apply for a full-time job, you know, working for someone else. But you just keep riding it out. I think you keep trying to, even now I'm always looking for opportunities. You know, I'd look up clinics that have like 20 GPs, you know, I'd be thinking, okay, where can I go? And maybe I can start doing like home visits or different services. Do you know what I mean? Like I've worked for so long trying to build this up. And so that's when I decided to have someone come on board with me and they could take on those new clinics or they could take some of my old clinics.
Yep.
So how does that, can you explain maybe how that looks and how that, how does that process work?
It probably came to me too easily. So when I worked at Vic Uni, I was teaching students, you know. So, and they were doing their bachelor, last year of their bachelor degree, and a lot of them went on to do their master's to become a dietitian.
Yeah, well.
So a couple of them would contact me. So it was around, it was around the time that I was thinking, I'm getting quite busy. Am I busy enough to have someone else help me out? Like, would I be able to give them enough work? And what happens if they leave me? You know, I kept thinking, oh, like, you know, I'll give them these clinics and they'll be like, nah, I don't want to do this anymore. And I just kept thinking these what ifs and all like really negative thoughts about it. And one of the dietitians, like that I taught, she contacted me and was like, you know, what are you up to now? And I thought I just got to ask her, you know, if she wants just a couple of days a week or one day a fortnight, whatever it is, I'll make it work. Yeah. And she was like, yes. You know, 'cause it's so hard to get a job when you graduate. Yeah, so she just jumped at it.
I think, obviously, this is the first time I've gone to meet you face to face. I've never met you before, but it seems like you're quite confident. You can control a room if you need to.
Yeah, but inside I'm dying. Do you know what I mean?
You're dying, like, but your front, or I mean, if I'm up, to be honest with you, I can't even see it as a front. But if you were to have a front on, people probably can't see beyond that because your confidence kind of supersedes whatever internal anxiety or, you know, nervous feelings that you're having.
I agree.
So I think that's really played a big part in your journey so far is that you're able to really talk about what you're talking about and truly believe in it, and you can easily sell that to someone. So I want to get into that a little bit because obviously, yes, you are a dietitian. Yes, you're a successful one. Yes, you do have a lot of passion for cooking and food. But there's also this kind of business side to you that's probably untapped because you haven't really looked into it too much, or maybe you have, but you can really sell the shit out of what you're doing right now. So what I want to know is, how did you learn that? Where did you get that from?
Oh God, I have no idea.
Was it family? Did you kind of witness any relatives, anyone doing it? Was it your hospitality jobs? I mean, standing there and talking about, you know, your value and what you can offer someone is never the easiest thing to do.
Yeah,
especially when it's your thing, when it's your baby.
As a dietitian, you shouldn't be, but you end up being like some kind of weird form of a salesperson. Do you know what I mean? Like you tell someone like, I want you to eat this way. And they'll be like, but why? Why should I do that? And then you've got to try and convince them that what you're telling them is a better way to eat.
Yeah, you got to challenge your thinking. And
yeah, so yeah. I think probably just being a dietitian has taught me some of that. And even like when you go and meet GPs, they challenge you. They'll be like, what do you think of this? Would you put your clients on this? And you got to be like, oh, you know, you got to think of something straight away.
Yep.
I think a lot of public speaking, I do like public speaking group sessions.
Yeah, from, awesome.
You know, like it's like diabetes prevention groups. I think doing things like that helps you build up confidence because they're putting you on the spot a lot. You know, weird questions as well. Like I remember somebody said to me, like they'll put in like pink coloring in the water to make salmon even pinker. And they're like, why are they doing that? And I didn't even know, like they ask.
I had no idea that existed.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, they're making their food pink. I don't know if they made that up.
Okay.
They were just like pulling my leg and I was just like, all right, I'll get back to you on that one.
Yeah.
idea.
So there was a patient that said that?
It was just like in a group's like setting, like they just ask really random questions that are not related to what you're talking about. And
probably deliberately trying to put you off course or trying to get you to trip up or something on your
answers. They love to ask you those controversial questions like butter versus coconut oil or, you know.
So which one's better?
No. I'm off the clock.
So I guess the thing about that drive and that work ethic and then your approach to dietetics, how does it, like how do you allow a new grad to like, be under your name? Like how does that work?
I orientate all the dietitians that are going to work with me. So when the first one came, I trained her for like about a week, you know, like so they'll shadow me and I will give them access to resources that I love making resources. So I have lots of handouts that I give to clients.
Nice.
And I encourage them to use mine, only because it's branded as well.
Yeah.
But it's up to them. Yeah, and I watch them as well. Not all of them, but if they're happy for me to sit in there, and like a lot of them want feedback. But I think sometimes you know, you go through that process of like sort of interviewing them and making sure that they're capable for the job, but you got to also trust that they can do, you know, what you hired them for. Like in any job, you know, you just got to hope that, you know, patients are going to warm to them. And and so far it's been okay.
Okay.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So think about the, like a couple of steps back, thinking about self-employment and wanting to run your own schedule and all that sort of stuff. Does that impact your employees at all? Like how do you, is there a bit of a mentality there for their flexibility or like how does it play into them at all?
So as in me working, like having days off and.
No, more so like, so in thinking about wanting to be self-employed, you want that sort of flexibility and freedom. You don't want someone to say, hey, I'm taking a sick day. Can you kind of request an annual leave or whatever? Does that factor into your sort of business at all? The fact that you understand that, I guess?
The fact that you've broken out of a 9-to-5 and now you're running your own thing and employing people.
Yes.
Do you have an insight of how you should treat your employees?
Yeah.
Like if they want time off, they can.
If they want time off or if they want flexibility.
Definitely. Mm. And like all the, like.
How many people do you have working for you, by the way?
So there's 4 in Melbourne, one in Bendigo. And I'm starting a bit more regional, but so there'll be another 4 added on to Horsham, Mildura, Swan Hill, Torquay, and I think that's all.
Yeah, amazing.
Ballarat.
How does it impact your day today? Like, are you still able to see the same amount of clients and stuff, or does it split your time?
That's been something that I've had to learn a lot. That I can't keep doing what I was doing. I can't, you know, see 8 clients a day every day, you know, 5 days a week. I've got to, so I started to take one day off where I was doing like pay slips, sort of like, you know, invoice, like sending them receipts for, you know, the time that they've worked for me. And, but even then that one day off isn't enough. And it's something that I'm learning now. And then like, you know, having enough self-care. That was hard. You know, I'd end up doing work on weekends. And it's things that I'm still learning now, but I think that's probably advice I'd give to anyone. Make sure you like schedule in time for yourself or else you burn out. And like there was a point when I got really burnt out and I didn't want to work.
Yep.
And I was thinking, is it because I don't want to be a dietitian? Like I got really confused, but I was just overworked.
At which point was that during your journey of the last few
years? It was actually last year.
Okay.
In probably about July, I got really down. Like, I was crying all the time. And I didn't really know what was wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go to work, but then when I was at work, I was okay seeing the client. So I was kind of confused. Mm. I was thinking, oh, maybe I'm depressed. Like, I wasn't sure.
Yep.
And I saw my doctor and he's like, you know, I think it sounds like you're a bit burnt out. And he's like, why don't you just talk to a psychologist? Just, you know, have a chat.
Yep.
And that actually helped me a lot.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yep.
And I think even if someone wasn't burnt out, talking to a psychologist about self-care and just like how life is going, you know, I think it really helps. Because they're trained to respond to you. Like, they know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell family and friends, which is great, but psychologists know how to give you the...
Definitely.
They help you think about things.
What did they make you realize at that point? What were you doing wrong? Or what you could be doing that's better?
I was... So I was seeing clients that I probably didn't really want to see, but okay. I was seeing to fill my days. Gotcha. So... the psychologist was like, who are your ideal clients? Mm-hmm. Who do you want to be seeing? And let's focus on you building that up. But then there was that fear of losing business. You know, if I say, I don't want to see people for weight loss anymore. Am I going to, you know? So I think.
Fear of missing out on business and opportunities. Yeah.
But you got to do it because you start being less productive and you're not giving your patients like the best service they could get because you're not 100%, you know, and you're wasting their time. Because if you're not like 100% invested into like helping people lose weight, then they should be seeing someone else. But I think when you start off, you kind of think, I've got to see everyone. I've got to be able to see anyone that gets referred to me.
And having that mentality, you can definitely spread yourself very thin very quickly.
But it makes sense because, like, that's, like, the hustle that you've been through to get it to here. Like, you've had to see everyone, right?
You take what you can get.
Yeah.
If a clinic's happy to have you, you take it and they'll be like, can you see kids? And you're like, yes. You know, but now I'm like, no. But, yeah, I did get to a point where I was like, no, I can't. So there's clinics that I work at and they have a list of, you know, I won't see anyone with allergies or children or, you know, eating disorders. Yeah.
So how did you turn that around? What did you put in place to go, okay, I need to start looking after myself. I need to start being a bit more selective with my patients and the way I run my day-to-day operation.
So thing was if I can't see these patients, why don't I have a dietitian that can? Why don't I have someone working for me that can see children, that can do eating disorders?
Yep.
So then I'm not really losing. So I just looked at it as an opportunity. And that's how I tried to expand in Melbourne. So, you know, and I found that I'd get emails, people like in the southeastern suburbs are like, do you work out here? And I was like, no. Wow. And I was like, okay, but maybe I could have someone working out there.
And how were those people kind of finding you? Was it word of mouth or Google, your website?
Yeah, through Google.
Okay.
And like that came about a lot with NDIS, so like the disability service. So, you know, there would be support coordinators inquiring for a participant and their participant lived in, you know, like Maui or somewhere really far away. And,
sure.
So, I like, you know, like they'd be popping up, so like just all over the place. And I thought, well, you know, this is something that it's getting busier and there seems to be a lack of dietitians in these areas, and especially regional. That's why I'm wanting to put dietitians in those areas because there's no one to see. Like the waiting list at the community health centres, like at Horsham, I was talking to the nurse, it's a 4-year wait to get into the dietitian. And I don't even know how that is possible, but it's 4 years.
So is that just for one? So say I need the dietitian, I wait 4 years.
You'd be dead by then, man.
Like my first consult and then the follow-up is like maybe 4 years again.
It might be that it's a 4-year waiting list till they're taking new patients or something. I don't know. I don't understand how that's possible. But she repeated that 4 years a couple of times.
Is it because there's a lack of dietitians in the country? Is it not a profession that people kind of take up and...
You probably
are you guys scarce? You can't find you anywhere, or
you just wouldn't have. You wouldn't have a lot of private practice dietitians. It would be dietitians working in hospitals or through community centres that are government funded.
but you wouldn't be out in the rural areas. I mean, doing work over there.
Who, me? What was?
Well, I'm just talking about dietitians. You won't be able to find them. They're quite rare to kind of come across.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's sort of why.
Wow.
I saw there was a shortage as well.
So coming back to my earlier question in terms of how did you turn it around, obviously it's not just about the business side. What did you do on the personal side to kind of decompress and find some more Carly time? What did that look like?
Yeah. So personally, walking more, getting outside in nature. So I live on the Maribyrnong River, which is really lovely.
Beautiful.
So I get out there and go for walks every day.
Yeah.
I also try to, so a patient said to me that it's not good to, I don't know if there's any truth behind this, but to listen to music while you walk. It's too stimulating. You know, you should be focusing on just walking and your surrounds. So I do that and I try and listen. I use it as meditation. So I try and listen to the birds and everything.
Nice.
Also having like, I love going to gigs. I love seeing bands play. So having things like that booked in, and if there are going to be weeks that I know are going to be busy, taking another day off so then I can get admin or something done on that day so I still have a two-day weekend.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because that was something that I was losing. I would have I've always scheduled 2 days off, but then you'd somehow lose that. You know, you'd be like, oh, I didn't get that.
You start guilt tripping yourself.
Yeah, and you're like, I didn't get this done, or I really need to look up that, or I need to do more marketing, or I don't know, something. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you stay strong with that? So when you book those days off, because we do a lot of freelance, we do a lot of things outside, like that's, I guess this is part of our side hustle. Like how do you actually turn it off though?
It's very hard.
Yeah, like booking the calendar is one thing, but then.
Yeah. I keep a note in my memo of all the things I've got to do the next week. And for some reason that writing everything down that I've got to do and putting it away, I don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can come back to it. Whereas if I don't have things written down, like ideas or anything, then I keep thinking about it. I go, I got to remember to do that on Monday or Tuesday. So I keep a list, but it is hard. You end up thinking about, you know, I'll be driving around. I'll see a new medical center. I'll be like, oh, I could, you know.
I got to start making some more sandwiches.
I think as time goes on, it gets a little bit easier.
Yeah.
You start to kind of not think too much about work, but, you know, I feel like you kind of get excited as well. And
I think, I mean, from what I'm hearing is the hunt. The hunt is still something that drives you, going and seeing different clinics and talking to different GPs. Like, it's the hustle of the hunt.
I think so.
Mm.
Because I'm always kind of thinking, where can we go next? Like, what clinic can we go to next? And, you know, like a lot of these regional clinics, they're connected to one of the clinics I work at in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And it was my friend Jess who she does all the admin side of things for me now, which has helped a lot.
Yeah,
awesome. I'm very indecisive. Even though I can come across as confident, I'll kind of be like, oh, I don't know if I should do that, or maybe I should, or I don't know. And she's like, Carly, like, what do you want to do? Like, think about it. I think you should. Or she's just direct. Good. And she puts me in line, which I need that. I need someone to sort of be the boss of me.
That can check you when you need to be checked and put you in the right.
Like, I'm a bit crazy sometimes. And sometimes I get too excited. I'm like, oh, you know, I'll email a clinic in Sydney. Mm. And she'd be like, Carly, stop. Like, you know, I get kind of a bit carried away.
Yeah.
And so that's been good. But she encouraged me to go regionally.
Okay.
So she's like, you know, this clinic, they have multiple clinics. Why don't you, you know, have a look at, why don't you put a dietitian there?
Mm.
And that initially scared me because that felt like big. That felt like bigger than what I was doing.
Mm.
And I was thinking, how would I even do that?
Mm.
Like, would I have to drive up there all the time? Like Mildura? Like, how do I even hire these dietitians?
Yep.
Like, so, and I'm in the process of that now. So I can't really tell you what's going to happen there.
Yep.
But,
It's kind of cool though, because thinking about that hunt, like to do that hunt, you have to have your like skills on lock. Like you have to have your name behind you to like have the confidence and the name to go for that.
This is not like me though. So like I come from a family that has always worked for someone else.
Mm.
No one has their own business. And even my when I finished, my dad was like, you know, you'll work in a hospital. That's what you'll do.
Yeah.
And I never thought that I'd have my own business. Never. Mm. In my head, that's like you're asking to lose money having your own business. Mm. That's how I used to think of it. So I think I've just somehow taught myself to be like this, you know, like find opportunities, and I don't think like that at all now.
No, well.
Yeah, I don't think of having a business as, you know, unless you, not in this sort of sense anyway. Mm. Like I'm not buying something and taking a massive risk, taking out a $500,000 loan or $1 million loan or something.
So think about that, I guess, that journey. Have you had any mentors along the way to help you, like help spark this?
Yes. So there are dietitians that I speak to, but I would say that the main person for me would be, and it's going to sound strange, but my mortgage broker's wife. So she's a lecturer, a business lecturer at RMIT.
Mm-hmm.
And she checked in with me one day about, you know, getting my mortgage, I don't know, changed over or something. And then she's like, how's your business going? She'll ask me questions. And I said, you know, I feel really confused about like what I'm doing. And it's all that accounting side of things. Sure. And like, you know, do I need to become a company? Can I still be a sole proprietor? Like I was just so confused about everything like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes you might not be told, like you'll just get a fine in the mail or something. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't sure. And she said, come in and sit down with me and we'll chat about it. And she was the one that actually made me think about, like, where do you want to be in the business? Like, do you want to be the one that's seen all the clients or do you want to overlook the business?
Mm.
And she actually tipped a whole, like, box of Lego out on a table and made us build my business. So we built all the little clinics. There was, like, little people that we put on top of different coloured hair for each dietitian.
Yeah.
But this was only when – this was me and when I had one other dietitian.
That's amazing.
And that's it.
Yeah, yeah. So you needed to visually map out your dream.
I felt like it was stupid though. So like when we're doing it, I was like, this is stupid. She's like, get your hands in there. And I'm like, oh no, like you can do it. But she was giving me ideas. She's like, you know, one day you could have like a health clinic or something and have other, you know, have like physios or osteos or have other people there or, and you know, could have cooking classes. So she had ideas and I was kind of like, oh, I don't know, like. And then she was talking about, you know, if you can't see women with menopause, we'll get a dietitian that can. So she did give me ideas. Wow. But when I left seeing her that day, I didn't really, I thought, oh, I think this is like, I don't think I could ever do that.
Yeah.
You know, like this is like beyond
deep. Surely that stayed with you in the back of your head.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. But I kept thinking about it and I was like, maybe I could, but I was scared.
Mm.
I was thinking, I don't know. I don't think I could.
Fear is an incredible thing. It really gets in your way of, what you want to do.
Oh, yeah.
And like when you dissect it, you're just like, really, was I scared of that?
When you put that fear behind you and you let it push you.
When you look back,
Yeah,
it's weird. It is weird because you often don't really have anything to lose, you know, especially if it's just like, I don't know, like when I walk into a clinic and ask if they need a dietitian, like that's what's worse, it's going to happen, you know?
Well, that's it. Yeah. You say that now, but probably 4 years ago, you'd have been shit scared. Oh, like,
I'd have stuttering. I'd be sitting in the car like, hi, I'm Carly Hughes.
There's some sandwiches.
Yeah.
Carly, we're starting to wrap up with it.
Yeah.
Whether you believe it or not, it feels like we've just started because this is awesome and we can probably go on for like another hour.
I'm glad you time checked us because, we could definitely keep going.
That went very quickly.
I mean, throughout this entire kind of chat, I feel that you've dropped gems in terms of learnings and advice. But if someone was looking to start their own thing, irrespective of what it is, what would be kind of the ultimate advice that you can give someone?
I'd say don't feel like you've got to do everything yourself. Because I did at the start. I felt like I had to know everything about accounting, get other people to do it for you. So that's how I started with my friend Jess. So she started doing some help for me, doing some things for me. And asking others to help you. I think that's kind of the main thing. Okay. Yeah.
Leaning on your networks.
Definitely. Yep. And just do it. Just take the plunge. Just jump in and just stop thinking. I feel like it takes us so long to decide to do something and then we just talk ourselves out of it in a second. So I think if you get an idea, just give it a go. Like, just do it.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
I recently read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and he sort of touched on that a little bit, and he referred to that sort of thing as like your board of directors. Like, you think of those people who you hire to give you advice as your board, you do, like, if you're the business kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's awesome.
Yeah. I think looking back, I'm pretty surprised at where I am now. Yeah, because I never wanted to go this direction, but I'm happy that I've done this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. Look.
Plugs. Yeah. You always forget.
Yeah, I always forget. Yeah. Please plug in your website, socials.
Your clinics, anything. Give us the pitch if you want.
Okay. You can check
Hello,
out.
Hello, I'm Carly Hughes. I got something.
So we haven't got to Instagram yet because I was always scared of going on social media. So it was Jess that encouraged me to get on. She's like, you've got to do Facebook at least. Our website's appetitefornutrition.com.au.
Awesome.
That has all our clinic details on there. We've got about 10 locations throughout Melbourne, 3 in Bendigo, and more to come. We also see NDIS participants.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook. So it's Appetite for Nutrition Melbourne. Check awesome. Us out awesome. And say
awesome.
Hello.
Look, we couldn't thank you enough for being you. Here with us. This has been awesome. I've actually learned quite a bit.
Okay, that's good. Sure that's
if,
good.
If you have, seriously, every single guest we get on here teaches us a little bit more about what they're doing, and you're a little bit different where you've already taken the plunge.
Yeah.
And your review mirror is like 3 years ago.
I think you just got to learn along the way as well.
Yep, definitely. Thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I can't wait to crack out that Lego and start to
build your business. Thanks.